Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for Monday, July the 19th, 2021. This is Air Force veteran David Corey along with Richard Hurley. We have two major segments in our show tonight. First, we have a series of interviews made by the VA about the experiences of veterans in dealing with post-traumatic stress and related problems. Then in our second segment, we have news of interest to veterans and their families from Washington, D.C. and the state of Florida. But first, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David. How are you tonight? Good evening, everybody. Hope everybody's doing well, considering the pandemic situation seems to be rising again. I'd like to remind our listeners that we also are a call-in show, even in addition to what we have planned for tonight. So let us know what is on your mind as far as veterans' issues go. You may have your own personal issues with regard to dealing with the VA, dealing with the Board of Veteran Appeals. So please call us at 1-888-627-6008. Again, that toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. I'm just going to make one before I introduce the first tape. I just want to make one note. Any of you who are currently waiting to be heard before the Board of Veteran Appeals, that's the appeal after the VA's flawed decision. One of the things you may want to consider as you prepare for your case and talk to your representative is focus on pain, the pain that you may have for your physical disabilities. I'm finding more and more as I appear in front of the Board of Veterans judges, appeals judges, that they are stressing that. And we've had some great conversations about the fact that the BVA feels that the VA just doesn't get it when it comes to when they do their exams, that they totally miss doing an evaluation of the veteran's pain in the back or the knee, you know, 0 to 10, 0 being no pain, 10 being high pain, whatever the case may be. And you really want to focus on that during your appeal process, because that's almost a guarantee remand kicker back to the VA for another evaluation. The Board of Veteran Appeals is across the board at this point, letting me know that whenever they see a situation where the VA has not adequately addressed the pain issue, that they're going to remand it back. And this was so clear in a couple of cases last week, where even before I started my presentation, the judge just said, "Mr. Hurley, I just want to let you know I'm going to remand this case back because the VA totally screwed up on their examination and did not properly examine the veteran for pain." So keep that in mind. I think that was a really good point that the Board of Veteran Appeals is making. I'd like to pass that along to all of you veterans who are waiting for cases in front of the Board of Veteran Appeals. Tonight, thanks to the VA's online program called Make the Connection, available on YouTube and other social media platforms, we will hear from three veterans about their experiences dealing with the effects of their military service, as well as how they coped with making the transition from military to civilian life. It can always be very, very difficult. First, we hear from Ryan, a U.S. Army veteran, and his VA counselor, Melissa. Ryan had a difficulty time transitioning from the service, but with the help of guidance and professional support provided by Melissa, he was able to go back to school and graduate. Doug, please roll tape number one.
My name is Ryan. I served in the United States Army for 12 years. I did 3 tours in Afghanistan and 1 in Iraq.
My name is Melissa. I'm a counselor at the VA.
I got out in 2011. I found myself going through a divorce, homeless, jobless, purposeless. It kind of went in phases as far as how I dealt with it. Phase one was a lot of self-medication. In my case, it was usually through alcohol. phase two is, man, that's a really bad idea. I'm going to go get help. So then it's doctor prescribed medication. So that certainly helped. Phase three and four is just getting back to a truly healthy lifestyle. My girlfriend, I was talking to her and she had said, I'm getting ready to go to Eastern Michigan University. They gave me, you know, this course outline. I think it sounds like what it is you're saying you want to do with your life.
You had an idea of what you wanted to do and you knew where you wanted to go to school for that. But it was that, how do I then turn that into a career after I complete the degree?
The program I did to go to school was vocational rehabilitation. And I got a phone call one day saying, hey, my name is Melissa. I just wanted to let you know I'm your new voc rehab counselor. And the timely fashion and the amount of communication that Melissa had with me was the start of, this lady's not playing around. I need to make sure I'm at least matching her effort.
As a rehabilitation counselor, my job is to help the veteran identify what their unique strengths are and abilities, and then try to help them plug that into a career path. And what we do is we identify that job that they want, and then we work our way backwards from there. And my role is to identify all the different services that the veteran might need in order to reach that potential.
I didn't need a lot of accommodations. But I had a little memo that I gave to all of my professors that said, if I choose to sit in the back of the class when I might normally sit up front, don't say anything to him about it. Leave it alone. He's sitting there for a reason. If there's a test coming up, make sure he knows about it so that I can go sit in a quiet room with a proctor and nobody else around, because I do have test anxiety.
Yeah, it's more about working smarter instead of working harder and getting a level playing field to compensate for the aspects of the disability that create that limitation.
By the time I got to Eastern, I felt like my head was mostly screwed on straight. But there were still a lot of rough times even then. One of my guys had committed suicide. So there were a lot of struggles, and sometimes I just needed to vent. Melissa is absolutely great. She would say, okay, are you actually looking for a solution to try and figure out how to approach this? Yeah, I am. She would go through with me. To this day, when I think about where I was and where I am now, it brings me to tears. I wish I would have had somebody like me that was willing to turn around and reach back and be like, hey, I've already been there, been through that. Let me help you up.
As a human being, we need to have something that we can connect to that connects us to other people. And I think when you were at your most lost, it was when you had the least amount of connections. Having somewhere to go, something to do,
yeah,
and then have it on top of all that be something really meaningful is, I think, what led you to where you are today more than anything.
There's a lot of people along the way that have contributed to me being where I am.
And we're here and we want to help. We're ready to help. It's just takes that step.
You got to be willing to ask for help.
Well, that's great. Thanks to Ryan, a U.S. Army veteran, and his VA counselor, Melissa, for sharing his story and her insights. Rick, any thoughts before we go to the next tape?
No, it was just, you know, more good information to pass along to our veterans.
VA does have, you know, good voc rehab programs. And as Ryan just said, you know, the first step is to reach out and ask for help. Okay, next we're going to hear from an Army veteran named Katrina. After losing her roommate while serving in the Army, Katrina had a difficult time adjusting to civilian life. She began isolating herself from others and feeling stressed. When the flashbacks started, she knew it was time to get help. So learn how her vet center helped Katrina open up to her family. Doug, if you'll please roll the second tape.
My name is Katrina. I served in the Army in 2002 to 2005, and I was a 92 Yankee Unit Supply Specialist. My first week back was really difficult because when I deployed to Iraq, I had a roommate, and When I came back from Iraq, I did not anymore. She was killed overseas. And one of the hardest things that I had to go through was, you know, that glorious day when you get all your stuff back out of storage and you try to start over, you know. They brought all my stuff, but then they started bringing all of her stuff. And that was hard. It's those little things that you didn't think, I guess you can't really prepare for. But as far as the transition, I didn't want to go out grocery shopping. And I thought it was perfectly normal to go grocery shopping at 11 o'clock at night when the store was still open. And, you know, I just thought, I don't want to deal with people, you know, but I think that's easier to say than, you know, I feel anxious in public right now. You know, I'm overwhelmed with all these people around me. It's too busy. You know, I don't think that's easy to acknowledge or say about yourself. In 2005 to 2000, I think 7 or 8 was when I finally did have my first flashback. I didn't even know what a flashback was. I didn't know much of any of that, but I knew I had to talk to professionals. And so that's what I did. I reached out to a vet center in my area. As you reach out and as you talk to these specialists, these therapists, these counselors or church support groups, what you learn is it's okay to not be okay. You just have to acknowledge what are the stressors or just acknowledge that you have stress. Sometimes I waste time trying to figure out what is it that's bothering me, but sometimes I just need, hey, I'm bothered. I need to talk to somebody now. If you really are trying to utilize the VA or the vet centers or church resources, you have to be honest. These are my shortcomings right now. This is what an issue right now, and they've always been able to not let me walk around or dance around the issues. You know, they know what they're doing. And then on top of that, being a law enforcement officer, they know the stresses that I still am undergoing. And sometimes they're connected, sometimes they're not. Sometimes it's just you're not taking care of yourself, and you need to hear that. My family, they understand. They don't push. They don't love me any less or treat me any different. There's nothing wrong with needing help. It's best to utilize everything and anything available that's going to make you a better person, rather than feel like you're alone and feel like you're going crazy or feel like you're damaged and beyond repair, because you're not. We can only get better when we acknowledge that we need that help. And there are plenty of people out there that are waiting to talk to you and help you and give you that guidance that you need to become healthy in all aspects of your life.
Well, thanks to Katrina for sharing her experience and her insights. Rick, over to you.
Well, you know, I think we forget how fragile are men and women who've been serving overseas and have been subjected to trauma and suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. And we talk about it all the time. Certainly we talk about it on this show all the time. And but I think, you know, we all need to step back and really analyze, you know, what are we doing about it? A few weeks ago, and I put this on Facebook, a young man who we represented got to know 100%, 31, 32 years old, communicated with me quite a bit, referred to us a lot of cases. You see him on Facebook out fishing. Seemed like life was going pretty good for him. He was 100%. He was really happy in that regard, because he was paying his bills, paying his rent. And apparently he had an issue. It seemed was a domestic issue that had been going on for a while, and he was in court. And I'm not sure exactly what happened, but he came home, and the next day his neighbor, who's also a client of ours, found him, and he was dead. Just caught me by complete shock and surprise, because I just never saw it. And I've been communicating with this young man for quite a while. recently, a couple days ago, I was reading about another young man out here in Citrus County who I had had a conversation with a couple of months ago. And he was also a combat veteran. And I read in the newspaper 2 days ago, he committed suicide.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff's happening all around us. And it's a crying shame. And I don't know if there's more that we as civilians can do to help. You know, I know one thing that when you see these people, I'm talking to everybody out there now, veterans, non-veterans, when you see other veterans who are struggling, don't just sit on the sidelines and say, hey, you know, you need to take care of yourself, or hey, give the vet center a call. I mean, you know, those are all great initial things to do for the veteran who might be suffering. But make sure you get his phone number. Make sure you have his name, and put a little tickler system going. And maybe every 2 days, just send him a text message, send him a phone, give him a phone call, and just say, hey, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Everything okay? Is there something I can do for you? And, you know, just, you know, I know I'm going to start trying to do that as best I can, because I think we need to stay on top of this stuff. It's just a crying shame for these men and women who signed on the dotted line when they were 18 and had all these high hopes when they went overseas to serve their country, and then come back and they're mentally damaged goods, and we're just not doing enough for them. And yeah, the VA might be trying, but I hear too many veterans tell me that they just don't do enough. They get a 10 or a 15 minute meeting with them, maybe 30 minutes, but they're more inclined to just pass along a new medication or fill that half hour and put their computer notes into the computer and send the veteran on his way. But, we're just still not doing enough. And on this show, we'll continue to point that out, and maybe we'll all start getting a little bit better. But, you know, when I see it right around me, two within, 3 weeks, and I'm just one lowly person in Central Florida, I can only imagine what else is going on around the country. So anyway, just wanted to share that, David. Over to you.
Well, thanks, Rick. Yeah, that's great. Great words of wisdom about the importance of reaching out, trying to help people. I think for a lot of veterans, when they're on active duty, particularly the combat veterans who have gone through the stress of being in the combat zone, they themselves may not fully appreciate how tough the transition is going to be for them individually for when they leave the service. You know, maybe they served in the service for 2 or 3 or 4 years. They weren't planning on making it a career, but they spent, one or two deployments over in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, they just thought they would come home and just resume their life. And maybe they haven't fully appreciate how much the military changed them. Just the fact that the military is such a 360 degree culture unto itself. And then when you add to it, the very unique and unreal world that it is to be in a combat zone, that adds a whole nother dimension to it. So it makes the transition coming home all the tougher, because they go from this world of exclusively military and people around them with certain levels of support, and now they leave and they're on their own. And yeah, the VA's there, but it's just a completely different experience. And a lot of people just don't handle that transition well, and they have been changed, in so many ways that they may not even really appreciate, and that others around them don't fully appreciate. They isolate, they don't discuss what they've been through. We all know that. So, and the other thing is, you know, we think about, the veterans that we talk to, we represent in our work, and think about how long the country has been at war. Yeah, we're finally leaving Afghanistan after almost 20 years there. Look how long the war was in Iraq, very long. And there's global war on terror still going on. One of my nephews just returned a few days ago from a 6-month deployment to Central Africa. You know, and so there are troops around the world. I have another nephew that's in the Navy and submarines. The military is worldwide still. And we tend to also forget, as soon as like one war is over, the previous wars are a distant memory for most people in the public, you know, like the first Gulf War in the 90s and certainly the wars before that. And yet these veterans are walking around with often lifelong scars. But any event, let's go to our third interview. Rick, if you want to introduce this third
interview. Next, we're going to hear from Ed, a U.S. Army veteran who developed problems with drugs while in the service. In this next interview, Ed and his daughter Jasmine talk about how mental health treatment helped him get his life back on track. Doug, please roll take number 3.
My name is Ed. I served in the Army, 82nd Airborne, and this one the years 1985 to 1988.
I'm Jasmine, and Ed's my dad.
I was infantry in the military. You know, my job was jumping on airplanes and walking constantly. You know, when I was in there, I had a couple of tragedies happen to my family. My big sister passed away. Something happened. I just wasn't myself, and I messed around, and I indulged in some things that wasn't good as being a soldier. So they told me I couldn't re-enlist. Once I got out of the military, my substance abuse history just... It expanded. It was terrible. I didn't have any life. I would wreck families. I would get with one girl, think we're going to have a life together. I would end up leaving.
He was in and out of my life. Every weekend, me and my sister would be outside waiting on Dad. Like, when his dad come in, sometimes he came, sometimes he didn't. Even though he was barely there, we still look forward to see him every weekend. Every time he comes, he drop us off, we cry for like 2 days. I didn't really know about his drug addiction. My mom would put it in my ear. Like, your dad's doing drugs. I'm like, no, he's not. He's my hero. And then it was true. He'll isolate himself from everybody. Like, he'll be quiet. I called him, leave him messages. He wouldn't answer. I didn't want to talk to him anymore for a while because of the drug use.
I was actually homeless. I was living in Arizona, homeless. It was 1,000,000 degrees. I had no contact with any of my family members. So I was living on 32nd Street in Van Buren behind Circle K. And that was my entire existence. I just didn't want to be here. Some guy with a blue outreach jacket on saw me. I had on some cut-up BDU shorts. And he asked me, was I a veteran? You know, and this was like in 2008. And he took me to some place. It was a transitional housing facility. They connected me with mental health providers, substance abuse counselors, and stuff like that. And next thing you know, my life started to grow. I went to school for a little bit. I get back into the workforce. I started going to different meetings for substance abuse and stuff like that. And I started making amends to these people. And they started accepting me back. You know, I would go to Chicago and apologize to all those family members that I let down.
He called me out of the blue one day. I was actually shocked to get a call from him. And he pretty much just apologized. He said it was the drugs, and he just apologized. That's all I wanted was an apology. And so after the apology, we began to talk every day. And then I just decided to come out here with him to Arizona.
Next thing you know, I got my life back. All those families and kids that I abandoned, they are now a part of my life.
He's just more outgoing and friendly.
I pay their phone bills.
Yeah, he's financially stable. And I don't know, he's just a different person. Like, he just brings so much positive energy in the whole room. And so I'm really proud of him, of how far he's come.
I'm in a program where my ninth step says I have to make amends to those who I have caused wrong. And my amends to my children is just a lifetime amends. I have to be there when they need me. And that's what I show up. When they call me, I'm going to show up.
He does.
I want everyone to know that no matter what you're going through, maybe you have an issue with substance abuse or being an addict or a mental health or PTSD, schizoaffective, all those things. Don't let those labels dictate who you are. go out and seek professional help. I do it on a regular basis, and my life has become extraordinary.
The advice that I suggest is if you just work hard, maintain everything, just, you know, stay positive, and then you can overcome anything. We've overcome a lot. He's my best friend now.
I love you, baby girl.
I love you.
Wow, thanks to Ed and his daughter Jasmine for sharing their experience. And I'm so glad that Ed was able to overcome his drug addiction and get his life back on track. Sounds like he and his daughter and his family are very happy. Rick, any thoughts?
No, just what you said there, David. I mean, you know, we just got finished telling you two situations of veterans who have sad stories that didn't make it, and then we get a nice good story where veterans making it. So it happens. People, they can make it, but they, you know, they make it because they've got support. They make it because they, you know, they're making it because they got support.
Well, I think the key
around them is pushing them.
Well, I think, you know, Ed mentioned that he had been homeless living behind a Circle K at 32nd and Van Buren in Arizona, which I know. When I was stationed in Arizona, I lived not far from that area in Arizona. He mentioned a million degrees. Yeah, it sure is is very hot in Arizona in the summertime, especially. If you've never been to Arizona in the summertime, you'll know that there are no clouds in the sky. They say it's a dry heat, but it's a killer heat. It's like living in a really hot oven and very bright. So I can't imagine how tough his life must have been being homeless. But I think the key for him was someone, you know, for some vet center came up to him and said, hey, are you a veteran? And started that step. So someone reached out to him. And then he talked about was basically the 12-step program, you know, and 9-step making amends and not wanting to get labeled with some label, you know, overcoming that and getting his life back on track. He certainly had a lot of support to do that. And that made all the difference. So, yeah, that's a great positive story, and hopefully others can be, motivated by hearing that. Okay, Rick, I know we have a bunch of news in the second segment of the program. You want to launch that for us?
Sure. The Department of Veteran Affairs announced two major decisions related to the presumptive conditions associated with Agent Orange and particulate matter exposures during military service in Southwest Asia. First, regarding Agent Orange, we will begin implementing provisions of the William M. Thornberry National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2021, adding three conditions to the list of those presumptively associated with exposure to herbicide agents, more commonly known as Agent Orange. Those conditions are bladder cancer, hypothyroidism, and Parkinsonism. Many of our nation's veterans have waited a long time for these benefits, said VA Secretary Dennis McDonough. VA will not make them wait any longer. This is absolutely the right thing to do for veterans and their families. The VA will apply the provisions of court orders related to NEMA versus the United States Department of Veteran Affairs, which may result in an earlier date for entitlement to benefits for veterans who served in the Republic of Vietnam during the Vietnam War. Vietnam War era veterans and their survivors who previously filed and were denied benefits for one of these three new presumptive conditions will have their cases automatically reviewed without the need to refile a claim. VA will send letters to impacted veterans and survivors. Over to you, David.
Yeah, and the other part of that in the VA's announcement dealt with respiratory conditions due to what they call particulate matter exposure. And the VA secretary recently concluded that they finished the first stage of a newly formed internal VA process to review scientific evidence to support the rulemaking process, basically resulting in a recommendation to consider creation of some new presumptions of service connection for some respiratory conditions. And that's based on the VA's evaluation of National Academies of Sciences, of Science, Engineering, and Medicine reports and other evidence. Now, you know, the whole idea of respiratory conditions, particularly from, the Southwest Asia area, the first Gulf War, as well as the wars since 9/11, whether it was open air burn pits or simply exposure to environmental issues, the natural environment as well as other pollutants in those areas, a lot of veterans have reported chronic respiratory conditions. So the VA's recent review supports the initiation of rulemaking regulations to address the role that particulate matter pollution plays in generating chronic respiratory conditions, which may include asthma, rhinitis, and sinusitis. Those are for veterans who served in the Southwest Asia Theater of Operation during the Persian Gulf War, that's also known as Operations Desert Shield, Desert Storm in 1990 and 91, but even those that continued to serve in post-combat operations throughout the 90s, all the way up to, the 2003 invasion of Iraq, to include not only, Saudi Arabia and Iraq and those neighboring countries, but also Afghanistan and Uzbekistan. According to VA Secretary McDonough, quote, VA is establishing a holistic approach to determining toxic exposure presumption going forward. We are moving out smartly and initiating action to consider these and other potential new presumptions grounded in science and in keeping with my authority as Secretary of VA, unquote. VA is initiating rulemaking to consider adding respiratory conditions, which may include asthma, sinusitis, and rhinitis, to the list of chronic disabilities based on an association with military service in Southwest Asia, Afghanistan, and Uzbekistan during the covered periods of conflict. The VA will conduct broad outreach efforts to reach affected veterans and encourage them to participate in the rulemaking process. I certainly hope that they do that and they try to do it expeditiously and not take years and decades to do that. We've had guests on our show over the last 4 years discussing the open-air burn pits. We helped publicize an open-air burn pit documentary by Greg Levitt called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Veterans, and there's a book by the same title. So the open-air burn pits was just one cause of these respiratory illnesses, but there are other natural and man-made pollutants unique to those areas of the world, those countries. And a lot of veterans go over there healthy and they come back with chronic respiratory conditions and other illnesses, in some cases cancers. So stay tuned. We'll try to keep you all updated on that. If you want more information, meanwhile, go to va.gov. You can also go to the VA Public Health website, which is publichealth.va.gov, and just do a search for burn pits, that should take you to information about that. So, Rick, back over to you.
The U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs announced on July the 6th that it has awarded $418 million in grants to more than 260 nonprofit organizations in June, allowing low-income veteran families around the nation to access services under the Supportive Services for Veteran Families, SSVF program. SSVF grantees are authorized to use the funds to rapidly rehouse veterans who become homeless or to prevent veterans from becoming homeless. As a result of VA's Supportive Services for Veteran Families program and other housing assistance efforts, veteran homelessness has been cut in half since the launch of 2010's Federal Strategic Plan to Prevent and End Homelessness, said VA Secretary Dennis McDonough. Since then, hundreds of thousands of veterans and their families have been placed into permanent housing or prevented from falling into homelessness by VA's homelessness programs and targeted housing vouchers provided by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. SSVF grantees are in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, Guam, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Through partnerships with the VA and community programs, SSVF provides eligible veteran families with outreach, case management, and assistance obtaining VA and other benefits, which can include health care, financial planning, child care, legal and fiduciary pay assistance, transportation, housing, counseling, and other services. Helping veterans in need of permanent housing remains a critical priority for the VA. In fiscal year 2020, the VA served 112,070 participants, including 77,590 veterans, and 19,919 children through the SSVF program. This year's grant recipients successfully competed under a notice of fund availability published November 10, 19, 2020. Funding will support SSVF services from October 1st, 2021 through September 30th, 2022. Learn more about the VA's programs for homeless veterans at va.gov/homeless. Again, that's va.gov/homeless. David.
Thanks, Rick. All good information to know, and I'm glad the VA is always looking to improve their programs for homeless veterans. Let's shift from Washington to the state of Florida. Here in the state of Florida, which is the third largest state now in terms of population, it's home to more than 1.5 million veterans. Veteran issues are also addressed in the state capitol. Governor Ron DeSantis signed three additional veteran-related bills on June the 29th that were sent to him following the 2021 Florida legislative session. These three were in addition to ones that he'd earlier signed. I just want to briefly summarize these to give people in Florida, but also around the country, an idea of what's happening at the state level in this state. One of those bills was House Bill 231, which is services for veterans and their families as part of the state's focus on mental health care and veteran suicide prevention, the issue you were just talking about a few minutes ago, Rick. As part of the focus, also working with the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay and other organizations, the legislation requires the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs to establish the Florida Veterans Care Coordination Program to provide and expand behavioral health care referral and care coordination services for veterans and their families, and to partner with the Florida 211 Network participants to provide such services. I think that's a great idea. You know, Rick, every week on our show, we talk about the VA's program, Coaching into Care program, the Veterans Crisis Line. But, you know, in probably every state, and certainly in the state of Florida, and then more locally to where I live in the Tampa Bay area, they have state and local organizations which are on the front lines of those in crisis, often mental health crisis, but other types of crises, homelessness, et cetera. And it's good to see that the state is helping to improve and coordinate the efforts of these different organizations at the state and local level, which will be a good supplement to what the federal government does, because people in crisis may turn to their local, you know, network and like the Tampa Bay Crisis Center and others for help. And it's important that they know they're part of a larger effort to basically improve, expand health care referral and care coordination for veterans. So that was one of the bills. The other one is, Rick, I'm going to ask for your share your insight about these. I know you have a lot of insight. But another bill that was signed in Florida was House Bill 7023, dealing with veterans treatment courts. And this legislation creates uniform standards and procedures for Florida's current and future veterans treatment courts, which are in many circuits in the state of Florida and even in other states. This bill allows a court with criminal jurisdiction to create and administer a veterans treatment court, or VTC, which may adjudicate felony misdemeanors with the exception of pretrial intervention of misdemeanor criminal traffic offenses. I know, Rick, you've had a lot of experience with some of the veterans you've helped. Any thoughts on or your insights about veterans treatment courts?
Yeah, what I think is outstanding about the direction of the court system, specifically the criminal court system, is that they are recognizing as a mitigating factor that mental issues, mental disease, PTSD, anxiety, depression as a result of military service was a contributing cause to the veteran's criminal behavior. And that's important because whenever you, and I, you know, prior to doing, working with David and doing the veterans work that we're doing, I spent a lot of time in New Jersey, New York, state and federal court in the criminal court system. And whenever you are arguing on behalf of a defendant, you have to weigh the aggravating versus the mitigating factors when imposing a sentence. And it's not the volume of aggravating factors versus the volume of mitigating factors, but rather the importance of each particular mitigating factor or each important aggravating factor. So the courts are now moving in a direction where they're seeing that the mental issues, the PTSD, anxiety, and depression are a strong mitigating factor when considering imposing a sentence. So for instance, a veteran, if there's a presumption of incarceration for a veteran for a particular crime, and you have a veteran who has a mental disease of some sort, the courts will oftentimes now depart from a sentence of incarceration and instead impose a suspended sentence, or not even a suspended sentence, straight probation. Whereas a non-veteran under the same circumstances won't get the same consideration. And I think that's really outstanding that the courts are recognizing that distinction. And, you know, David, you mentioned, I think you mentioned Camp Hope out in Houston, and we've had the opportunity to take some of our veterans who clearly were looking at incarceration, and instead of imposing incarceration, the veteran court judge agreed with me and or his criminal defense lawyer that the veteran should be given another chance at Camp Hope. And the judge will, in some cases, either suspended the sentence upon completion of the Camp Hope, or put him on straight probation and let him go to Camp Hope. And in either case, the veteran's given, quote unquote, another chance. And I think it's really important because we talk about veterans who've committed suicide, veterans who are homeless. I mean, you know, it's a serious matter, and you've got veterans who are committing crimes to survive, whether it's drugs, alcohol, or stealing, whatever the case may be. They're committing crimes to survive. They're committing crimes to cope with living in this civilian world that they are having a tough time doing. And, you know, we've got so many laws on the books, both state and federal. I think, you know, if you wanted almost every person given almost every day could probably end up violating one of these laws that we have on the books. Well, imagine a veteran who doesn't have the same strength, who doesn't have the same capabilities to kind of cope with everyday life. Imagine what he or she is going through, and the chances of that veteran violating some criminal law, federal or state, is extremely likely. So the courts are now moving in a direction, just like in the 90s. Hey, in the 90s, what do? We had drug courts. We put people in jail for simple marijuana convictions and threw away the key, because that's what we were doing in a reaction to all the drugs that were coming into this country from abroad. That was the way, and that was under two different administrations, both Republican and Democrat. It didn't matter. That's what they were doing, and that's what they're imposing. And I got a taste of that firsthand because I represented hundreds of those people, and it was a crime the way we were just putting them in jail and throwing away the key. And some of these people that I represented were veterans. Well, today we're moving in a different direction. We have a softer court. We have judges who are taking the time to understand what the problem is. You know, David, I just want to add this one story. I have a veteran, and you know him really well. Matter of fact, I have a hearing for him on Thursday. And he had a situation. He was a combat veteran in Iraq, and they had PTSD. And he got involved in a criminal enterprise, so to speak, and basically involved stealing Social Security from an elderly person. It was an awful crime, and one that, you know, you never wanted to put that in front of a jury. But the day of sentencing, the government was looking for 36 months. And And I was arguing for a downgrade to 10 months. No one really thought I would get the downgrade because he had a prior offense, plus the facts and circumstances of this particular crime. Well, I was trying to think, how can I help this veteran? Well, I argued the PTSD, and his addiction, his coping mechanism was gambling. He wasn't a drinker. He wasn't a drug addict, but he gambled.
Wow.
And he was a bad gambler, David. He was a bad, bad gambler. He lost a lot of money. Well, in order to get himself out of debt and keep and survive, he got into this. He stole. And he stole from the Social Security.
Wow.
Well, I argued this for like 20 minutes. And the judge I was in front of in Mobile, Alabama, she was a first assistant under Jeff Sessions when he was Attorney General in Alabama. And so, you know, she was pretty tough. That was her reputation. If she was under Jeff Sessions, you know, she was pretty tough. Well, she sat there and listened to me. She started asking me questions. And we went through the medical record. We went through the medical report that I had from his doctor. She turned around and said, you know something, I agree with Mr. Hurley. And she downgraded the sentence to 10 months.
Wow.
And let me tell you, the jaws in that courtroom just dropped. They could not believe it that this judge would accept that. And the government was mad. I mean, I knew that, you know, I had gotten along with the government's lawyers really well throughout the process. And when we walked out of the courtroom, the government's lawyers just looked at me and they couldn't believe it. They were not too happy. But the point I'm making is she understood and she recognized that post-traumatic stress disorder was a contributing factor, and it was therefore a mitigating factor in imposing sentence. So these veterans courts, I kind of digressed there, but these veterans courts are doing the exact same thing. And it's super that they're doing it because it's giving these veterans a chance to get their life back on track and to keep them out of the jail system, which, as far as I'm concerned, once you start going down that rabbit hole in and out of jails, it takes a pretty, pretty strong guy and a pretty good family to get you righted in the right direction. So anyway, that's all I've got on that topic.
Well, that's a lot. Thanks, Rick, for sharing that. And I think, it reminded me of a veteran who had reached out to me from prison about 12 to 15 years ago. I think he must have seen an ad that I had at the time in a veterans news magazine in Florida that actually even got circulated to some prisons in Florida. And this individual who was sentenced to life for murdering two people, his wife and a man that he thought was having an affair with his wife, he was a combat veteran of two wars, the latter part of Vietnam and then the first Gulf War. And highly intelligent, but he suffered from well-documented post-traumatic stress, paranoid delusions, and other mental problems. And he had contacted me for help with the VA. And in the course of representing him for a short time, you know, it then was an eye-opener for me because, you know, I learned that just at his prison alone, there were a couple hundred other veterans in prison for various offenses, the whole gamut of offenses. But it also reminded me how, you know, in this individual's case, he had basically untreated severe psychiatric problems going back to his experience in Vietnam. And, you know, the Vietnam era veterans, they came home as he did. And then he stayed in the guard or reserve for a while. He wasn't on active duty continuously. He stayed in the guard and reserve, somehow muddled through. And then when in 1990, when Desert Shield kicked up, he gets activated again. But he was severely mentally damaged from his experiences in Vietnam and developed, you know, the alcohol and drug problems. And anyway, he became really messed up, which resulted in the crimes he committed. And, certainly a veteran treatment court isn't going to help someone that's guilty of murder. But, if there had been some intervention and some help for this guy early on, you know, after Vietnam, for instance, maybe he could have found himself living a more stable life and not suffering from, you know, paranoid delusions and other problems. At one point, after the Gulf War, he was a baggage handler at Miami Airport, and the noise of the airplanes, et cetera, somehow triggered some sort of flashback, and he thought that he was back in Vietnam and his airfield was under attack, so he was flipping out, and they had to involuntarily commit him to a mental hospital at that point. So there's a lot of stories like that, not necessarily involving murder, but a lot of veterans who self-medicate with drugs, with alcohol, and then those problems then lead to often other problems, as you know. So there's a big need out there for help, and the Veterans Treatment Court has an important role to play. I know in Hillsborough County, because of the motivation and drive of a number of veterans, both judges and other veterans, it's a big success. I know it is in other parts of Florida. So this legislation recently signed by the governor is basically to try to establish uniform standards statewide. So kudos to them. Now, I know, Rick, we're about out of time, so we're going to hold the rest of this news for another week. But if you want to add anything and then maybe tell us about the Coaching into Care program.
No, I think we've covered a lot of ground. I think one of the theme here tonight is, and I think it's the theme every night, that we, take care of our veterans. And, like I said, not just a passing, you're right, we need to do that. You really have to be proactive. One of the things I tell people about, they come to me and say, what can I do to help a veteran? And I say, well, instead of like giving them money, or not giving them money, but instead of donating money, if you don't want to do that to a nonprofit, when you see a veteran and they're having breakfast, lunch, or dinner, and you can spot them usually wearing a veteran's hat, a Vietnam hat, some sort of hat that indicates that they are a veteran, or they've got a shirt. But it's pretty obvious when you see them, go over and just grab the bill and say thank you for your service. That moment of affirmation from you to them means so much. David, you and I are successful. We win a lot of cases for veterans. And I got to say, so many of them tell me, the money's good. This is really going to help me out. But I'm so happy that our government is finally recognizing my role in my service and what I sacrificed for my country and how I now, and how I've suffered because of it. So let's just all keep that in mind as we go forward into this next week. And I guess I'll go into our Coaching in the Care program. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching in the Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call at 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching in the Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs has the VA, has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, Debbie.
Well, it's time for us to go for this evening. I'd like to thank you all for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our producer, Mr. Doug Newsom, and our sponsors, Corey and Early Law Group. Hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same station, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time. Again, bbsradio.com, Station 1. Until then, we hope you have a great week and stay safe.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.